Hello, and welcome to the Medical College of Wisconsin's Coffee Conversations with Scientists. I'm your host, Raina Andrews. And if you're tuning in for the first time, let me introduce myself. I'm a mother, a children's book author, a public health ambassador, a TEDx speaker, and an engaged community member. I'm happy to return as your host of Coffee Conversations with Scientists for the 2024 season. Coffee Conversations with Scientists has been presented by the Advancing a Healthy Wisconsin Endowment since 2021, which is a statewide nonprofit working to improve health and advance health equity in Wisconsin. So do we have a show for you today? I'm very excited about today's topic because it's near and dear. It's near and dear to my heart because it's personal. I have family members and friends who are living with loved ones who are who have dementia. And today we are talking with one of my dear friends who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, Dr. Leslie Ruffalo, who is the associate professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And we're talking about how transformative imagination and creativity, communication strategies, and how all those can really support caregivers and increasing patient relationships for persons living with dementia. And so if you aren't experiencing it directly, you know someone who is. So we will go through a full gamut of information to really help you navigate how to deepen your relationship with your loved one living with dementia. So welcome, Dr. Ruffalo.
Thank you, Raina. It's so great to be here today.
Yes. So we'll be covering a great list of questions regarding integrative dementia care. We have a lot to cover in a very short coffee break. However, the beauty of Coffee Conversations with Scientists is that it's live. And so we encourage you to type your questions in the chat and we'll try to get to as many as possible by the end of the show. So let's get into it. All right. So Dr. Ruffalo, I think many people, when we think of dementia, I often hear the term collapse with Alzheimer's. Can we start and begin creating a framework for this conversation by distinguishing the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia?
Certainly, Raina, this is a great question for us to build our conversation around. So just a clarifying statement here. So dementia, you're absolutely right. We often collapse them. And dementia is more of a general term. Really, we like to think of it as an umbrella term to describe a range of symptoms that are related to an individual's ability to perform their everyday activities on their own. Whereas Alzheimer's exists under that umbrella of dementia. And Alzheimer's is a specific brain disease that we know affects the part of our brain that's responsible for our learning mechanisms. And so often we see some of those earlier symptoms of Alzheimer's being memory loss. But certainly dementia is the kind of the catch-all general term that Alzheimer's exists under.
Mm-hmm. So today we're talking about the role caregivers play and how they can better support persons living with dementia. Can you give us an overview of the current challenges faced by caregivers and patients living with dementia?
So the first thing that I'd like to point out is that there really are two categories of caregivers in my mind that we think about. So first, there's this category of paid caregivers. And these are really those paid individuals that care for the older adult that might be experiencing dementia or memory loss. So this could be somebody that's providing, you know, home care, mobility assistance, meal preparation, maybe even providing some health care in the home. Things like that. Now, my work has largely focused on a different category, and this is what we refer to as, you know, the unpaid family caregivers. And these are really individuals, they could be family members, friends, neighbors, that are working to support the older adult. And the key thing to kind of recognize about this category, this unpaid family caregiver category, is that they often don't recognize themselves using the term caregiver. An individual could be a son or a daughter that just says, I'm not a caregiver. I'm just helping out mom or dad around the house more these days. Or one of my favorite stories actually comes from one of my mentors in this space, Dr. Kathy Gale, where she once shared with me this story of her mother. And as her mother was aging, her mom's doctor asked her, you know, do you have a caregiver? And her mother said, well, I don't need a caregiver. I have Kathy to help me. And so, by healthcare and social models, we put this label of caregiver out there. And by definition, these individuals are caregivers, certainly. But I think it's really important for us to recognize that in this space, lots of people don't see themselves as caregivers. So kind of with that clarification in mind and those two different categories, I do want to speak into the challenges that you were asking. And I do have two slides that I would like to share with us all today. So, Michael, if you could put our first slide up, that would be great. I'd love to walk our attendees through some data here.
And Leslie, can you pull those slides up as well?
Should I share screen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Absolutely. Yep, I do have the ability to share. Mm-hmm. Let me see here. All right. Bear with me, everyone. Here we go. All right. So the first slide that I have up here, this is a slide directly from the AARP, and it really is explaining and breaking down what's going to happen over the next 25 or so years as we experience that sharp decline in the number of caregivers available to support our aging baby boomer population. So the data here says that when we look backwards, when we take a backward look in 2010, the current status in the U.S. was that we had more than 7 potential caregivers to support every person in our country that was in this high risk kind of dementia risk zone of 80 years or older. In 2030, so just in a couple of years, we're going to see that ratio decline to a ratio of 4 caregivers for every one person over the age of 80 that will need a unpaid family care. Caregiver. And then that ratio is even expected to fall even less and to 3 to 1 by 2050. And so some of the challenges and some of the reasons that we attribute this sharp ratio decline is really rising demand. Again, I mentioned the baby boomer population is aging right now, and we had just coupled with a shrinking family size. And so, again, that's kind of the challenge that we're up against. I'm going to zero in closer to home here. So this is going to look at the data focused in Wisconsin. And for me, these images are so striking. So on the left side here, we have our data from 2015, where you can see here that most of Wisconsin's 72 counties had less than 18% of their population over the age of 65. When we look to the map on the right, this is projected data for 2040. And what we can see is that most of Wisconsin, except 4 counties, will have a quarter of their population over the age of 65. And you can see here that most of our counties in Wisconsin are marked with these dark blue ranges, which represent 27 to 45% of their population over the age of 65. So in some cases, we're looking at half of the population, again, being over the age of 65. And also many of our rural communities are going to be impacted by this, raising up questions around transportation barriers to get to appointments and, you know, for me, this is personal. My parents live in a rural county far away from me. And so thinking about how my parents are going to be cared for someday. So I think these images really just paint a very complicated picture of how we're going to care for everyone. And I just want to add one more point here, just to localize it with some data before I turn it back over to you, Raina, to contextualize what we're up against here. We have about 120,000 people in Wisconsin that live with Alzheimer's disease or other related dementias. And over those 120,000 people, 190,000 fit this category of unpaid family caregiver. And why we really want to pay attention to this is that the most recent literature that I have seen points to about 60% of those unpaid caregivers recognizing that stress, extreme stress, is a part of that caregiving role and that burden. And so we certainly don't want this population of people that's going to care for our older adults to be feeling high emotional stress related to those caring for their older adults. So the bottom line here is that we really need to be thinking about policy change and system change that can support both the older adult and their caregivers.
Wow. Thank you, Dr. Ruffalo. I appreciate the illustrations, and we can take those down. I appreciate the illustrations because they really run home that if I can just regurgitate what you're putting down here is that we have a rapidly aging population, with the baby boomers being the largest population, and the children, they didn't multiply as much as them. And so going from a 7-to-1 to a 3-to-1, the first thing that came to mind is, well, are 3 people caring for 1 person not enough? But thinking about unpaid family members, if you're caring for a loved one who's unable to care for themselves, from appointments to feedings to cleanings to making sure they're taking their medication, 3-to-1 isn't enough, because you're stopping your life to take care of a loved one, which is very problematic. That's interesting. You know, I'm curious, what inspired you to explore the transformative power of imagination, creativity, and communication dementia care?
Question. So my inspiration was really born out of good luck, I have to say. So about 7 or 8 years ago, I was connected to Dr. Kathy Gale, who at the time was the executive director of ARIS Senior Network. And we came together to explore work around supporting unpaid family caregivers of an older adult by looking at what supports were available at a community-based organization level, a healthcare level, and in the public sector. These entities often act in silos. And so our work was really positioned around how can we create some cross communication and some warm and fuzzy handoffs between these entities to better support and kind of provide some wraparound care and resources and services for the older adult and their caregiver. And I was joined in that work by the Aging and Disability Resource Centers of Waukesha County and Frederick's Division of Post-Acute Care. So really dynamic multi-partnership group. And also Dr. Melinda Cavanaugh from UW-Milwaukee's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare. So really diverse partnership. Most recently, I've been working with an organization called Time Slips with Sammy Goodrich, Angela Fingard, and Ann Bastings to really engage those creative communication techniques for those living with dementia and their caregivers and other health professionals.
Wow. So when I first introduced you, I'm like, we go a ways back. And something that I just want to highlight here is I so appreciate your collaborative approach. And I've always known you to be this way as a practitioner. And just the simple fact of you shouting out that this did not happen in a vacuum, but this happened in collaboration and partnership, I just really want to buoy up. And for those who are in the seat of working, living, supporting individuals living with dementia, I think it'd be helpful if you could share some insights into your integrative dementia care program and how it addresses the challenges faced by caregivers and patients.
Absolutely. So I'm going to focus for this question, I'll focus on my most recent work with Time Slips. So some of you might be familiar that are joining us today with Time Slips. Some of you may not. So Time Slips is an evidence-based storytelling method that has been studied in many, many small groups of people experiencing dementia or other forms of isolation or maybe some cognitive challenge. And so with support from the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment, we established what we called the Creative Care Institute for Dementia Care Specialists, whereby in this institute, we developed a statewide partnership with Wisconsin's dementia care specialists, and we offered Time Slips certified facilitator training to support them in their work, to support the older adults that they were caring for as dementia care specialists, and also the ripple effect of the caregivers that they were interacting with. So for this project, again, we partnered with the Aging and Disability Resources Centers of Wisconsin and the tribes across the entire state of Wisconsin. And we trained nearly 40 dementia care specialists to become facilitators of this Time Slips methodology. And our goal was really, really to give the dementia care specialists as practitioners another tool for their toolkit on how to how to engage in relationship building and how to find easy ways to communicate with the older adult and the caregiver that didn't rely on resurrecting memories from the older adult.
In our opening, you talk. I mentioned imagination and creativity. How does imagination and creativity play a role in improving caregiver and patient relationships within your program?
Absolutely. So what I refer to as creative communication strategies, they really do shift us away from expecting that memory matters. And it's really incredible to see how powerful it can be when we just keep things simple, when we communicate with one another. And when we think about it, As we age, our minds change. And a lot of times those of us that are interacting with older adults, we ask ourselves questions, you know, how can I connect to my loved one? Or how can I connect to a client? And the work coming out of time slips really invites us to try imagination and rather than leaning on memory. And they use a method called, you know, asking the beautiful question. So a beautiful question could be something that is very open-ended, like, what do you treasure in your home and why do you treasure that? And this can stimulate so many responses and so many starting points to engage in meaningful conversations. So again, it's really built around this ideal and this premise that we need to shift away from memory expectations and allowing that older adult to just connect with whatever is meaningful to them in that moment and not feeling like they need to have the right answer.
That is so beautiful. And as you're describing it, just made me smile. And I'm wondering if you could share just a couple examples or some key outcomes or success stories you've observed from implementing your program in action.
Absolutely. So in our grant with Time Slips, as I mentioned, we trained these dementia care specialists on a few strategies that were related to active listening and asking open-ended questions like those beautiful questions. And some of the workshops that we facilitated were really built around the idea of helping folks to work with older adults around just good old-fashioned creative storytelling. And whether that storytelling was accurate or not, or, you know, was built on a memory, it didn't matter. It was just creating new stories. So one of my favorite strategies that Time Slips does is as they often engage with groups around kind of a cohort model of training. And as they kind of take this cohort of learners through their training and preparing them to integrate these creative communication strategies into their practice, they collect stories and quotes from the work. And one of the resulting products can often be an art display that exemplifies those quotes. And in our work, we actually worked with a local musician, songwriter to produce a final product that was a song that was actually a recorded song that again pulled in some of these representative storytelling quotes that our older adults had shared with us throughout our project or that the caregivers themselves had shared. And so this final product of this produced song becomes this lasting product that those that have been impacted by the work can have with them and take forth beyond just kind of the official cohort learning that happens within the boundaries of kind of the guided educational piece of this.
That is so beautiful. You know, we have a very chatty group today, which I absolutely love and I think is the beauty of Coffee Conversations with Scientists. So I'll only ask two more questions and I'll move out of the way. My next question is for individuals or organizations interested in adopting similar approaches, what steps would you recommend they take?
Great question. So I will fully disclose, I am not an arts-based person. I'm kind of like, how did this work find me? Because I didn't find it. I'm not an arts-based person. I'm a pretty bland researcher. Like I'm all about research and evaluation. So I often don't think outside of the box. So I would encourage anyone that's thinking about implementing some of what you heard today, I would encourage you to think big, think innovative, think about what are those small ways that we can better support our aging population and those that care for them, and just to really look around you and explore creative and innovative strategies. I know it's hard to get those strategies that come with an evidence base, but to look high and low for the innovation and the creativity, because we do have a lot of data that does support that this does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And I remember you also mentioning and doing some well-deserved shout outs to Time Slips, Aging and Disability Resource Center, ERA Senior Network. So if you have a loved one that is living with dementia, or if you are a caregiver or know someone, those would be wonderful resources and organizations to partner with. And so if we could just put that in the chat so our viewers would be able to access those links directly. And in closing, for my part, finally, how can interested parties connect with you in the future to learn more about your work or seek further guidance on dementia care?
Yeah, thanks, Aunt Raina. So I would certainly, just as you said, I would encourage folks listening today to check out the websites that are being put out. These are great organizations that I've worked with and have just, again, they're really on the cusp of innovative thinking in this area. And for anybody listening today from a research perspective, if this is something that you are interested in exploring, kind of the intersection of community engaged research, and evaluation, I'd be happy to connect with anyone interested and have a conversation about how to integrate this into your work.
Yes. And if you'd like to reach out to Dr. Ruffalo, in the chat, we're adding lruffalo@mcw.edu. That's lruffalo@mcw.edu. And you'll see it in our chat in just a second. So let's turn it over to our audience. Yes. So we have a number of questions here. Hopefully I'll get through as many as possible. The first one is, how much of a role does sugar have to do with dementia? Oh, I knew this was coming.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to confess that one of the great things about my role as a community engaged researcher is that I'd be the content expert. I just have to know how to research and evaluate things. But certainly we know that there is a lot of evidence that shows that diet is related to dementia. We know that diets that are rich with vegetables and proteins and whole grains is definitely a protective mechanism for our natural aging process and is going to protect us against dementia and some other Alzheimer's and other cognitive decline diseases. So yes, healthy diets matter without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we should do a follow-up show on how diet overall has an impact on dementia. And I appreciate that. Has there been any advancements in preventative medicine for dementia?
This is not where my content expertise lies. I'm the community engaged researcher, but I would say that we are learning more about dementia, certainly about Alzheimer's. You hear the promotion around some early detection around Alzheimer's disease, some prevention that is occurring in the space. So I think we're at such an exciting time in healthcare and science discovery, really on the cusp of so much change happening so rapidly. I can't speak to any early detection tests that stand out to me. There are probably others joining today that are way more expert in the space than I am. But certainly it's something for us, I think, to talk to your healthcare providers about, and they would absolutely be in the know on any preventative screening or testing that can happen in the space.
Mm-hmm. So along those lines, another viewer is asking, is dementia hereditary?
So we'll kind of back up a little bit. So dementia kind of being that, as I kind of said in my opening comments, kind of being that catch-all general term. So dementia is not a disease in and of itself. So really hard to, I think, compartmentalize that question. But I believe that there are some links between Alzheimer's and other related dementias that actually are specific diseases and some hereditary genetic components to that.
Okay. So what I'm taking from that is that if you have a family member, like a parent who has dementia, doesn't mean that you automatically will have dementia. Just simply through the aging process and the decline in cognitive abilities would qualify you as being on the spectrum of having dementia.
Yep. And I think this reroutes us to your earlier comments, Raina, about we know that lifestyle matters. We know that, you know, taking care, eating right, exercising, and keeping our brain sharp, those things matter and will be protective factors against the natural aging process.
Mm-hmm. This next question kind of hits home where they ask, how do you encourage a family member to seek help when symptoms are present, but there is resistance for accepting these changes?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a tough one. There are many, many places to seek help. So I think that's the good thing that we have going for us is that when you suspect that a family member or perhaps a loved one is on a trajectory for, you know, cognitive decline, memory loss, and those concerns are rising up in you. First and foremost, I think having a conversation with the older adult's healthcare provider is a great first step. A lot of times our healthcare providers will be in the know. They will be aware of local community supports that can provide support to you as the caregiver, but also support to that older adult as the trajectory of their disease may will absolutely continue on. So I think healthcare providers as a kind of a first line of what do I do? What are my next steps here? Mm-hmm. The other thing I would note is that there are a lot of support groups in our communities. One of the things that I didn't touch on, but memory cafes are a very popular strategy in this space where you can go to a memory cafe as just a caregiver and seek that counsel, seek that advice, get recommendations from others that have experienced that same resistance that you have, and find out what did they do? How did you get over this obstacle? And so there are lots of caregiver supports out there where you can lean into the wisdom of others that have gone before you and really just kind of let them guide your next steps in this space.
Did you say memory cafe?
Memory cafes, yes.
So it sounds like they are like caregiver resource centers in a cafe setting.
Yeah, they're pretty broad. They can really mean anything. And they can, so the memory cafe, again, it's kind of this catch-all term that we use that and they're kind of locally governed or set up, I will say, where, you know, the Aging and Disability Resource Center might run one or some volunteer organizations. Sometimes a memory cafe can happen in a church, a senior center, any sort of type of community-based organization can host a memory cafe. And again, lots of flexibility on who is the host of them. But the target here, the premise again here is that, you know, a memory cafe can be, it could be targeted towards, again, the older adult that is experiencing dementia. That could be the focus of it. It could be that a memory cafe is set up just solely to support the caregiver and their journey in this space. Or it could be that it's both, that it's the caregiver and the older adult that attends the memory cafe together. So lots of opportunities. Again, I would encourage anybody that's listening to this, the Aging and Disability Resource Center associated with your county will likely have a wealth of information about the where, the when, the how memory cafes in your local community operate.
Thank you. I'm so glad that you highlighted the memory cafes, and we've already dropped that link in the chat. We have time for one more question. And the question is with the growing numbers of aging population, and especially the heat map from 2040, where do you see the future of your work?
The good news is that I have worked for a while. there's going to be no shortage of work. I really believe that the future of my work is going to continue to collaborate with community-based organizations and healthcare systems that are at the pulse of this. This is what they do every day of their boots on the ground work. And so collaboration and partnership work is key in this space. None of us has the solution alone. So the solutions are definitely going to have to be partnership driven and collaboratively driven. And to kind of reference my earlier comments, none of kind of this crunch that we're going to experience and that we already are experiencing can be done by short-term kind of band-aided solutions. It really is around authentic system change. It's changing processes, and no one entity has the ownership on that. It's not like we have to see all the changes in healthcare, or we have to see all the changes in some of our public organizations that support our aging populations. It has to be very coordinated and transferable. And so one example of that I'll just offer real quick in our last few minutes here is one of the things that we recognized earlier in our work is that often the caregiver is not even identified in this work. And so, and it's inconsistent. So some healthcare organizations or some community organizations do a really great job of identifying who the caregiver is, how are they involved in the care of this older adult. But even just systematizing the identification of the caregiver and doing competency assessment around what are the needs of this this dyad, right? The caregiver patient or caregiver older adult dyad. And how do we customize and contextualize the support that that dyad needs and customize that support across community, healthcare, and public sector? And so I really think that that's where our future solutions have to go. And I'm excited about what the future is going to bring. It's going to, again, require some really, really innovative thinkers to think outside the box, and we'll stay tuned on where it goes.
I love that. Did you just drop the virtual mic? Okay. And so with that, I want to thank you, Dr. Ruffalo, for your time and extending your talent and expertise with us today. We really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And thank you all who tuned in today on this sunny Wednesday afternoon.
Yes, yes. And so we got through a lot of questions. I'm sure people who go through the chat will have more questions that pop up. And if we didn't get a chance to get to your questions today, we ask that you please send me an email at conversations@mcw.edu. And we'll try to get to you as soon as we can. And so I hope you all enjoy the rest of your week. And thank you for joining us for a coffee break. Have a good one.
The Medical College of Wisconsin's Coffee Conversations with Scientists is sponsored by the Advancing a Healthier Wisconsin Endowment. Coffee Conversations with Scientists occur monthly as Facebook Live events and are produced by the Medical College of Wisconsin. We hope you join us next month for another virtual coffee break and a conversation with a scientist.